Thousands of displaced children on the South Sudanese side of the border with Sudan are at risk of deadly cholera outbreak due to flooding and a lack of adequate sewage system. Now, cases of cholera have already been reported in resettlement camps in Malakal, farther down the River Nile, where many of the refugees from Sudan and returnees from South Sudan have been resettled after they crossed the border. Now, Save the Children's Director of Advocacy, Muzamil Sebi, joins us in the studio. Tell us more about this particular predicament. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Irene. Thank you very much.
Right. So which areas on the border are most affected by this cholera outbreak?
Well, I mean, there already who report that indicated that there is an outbreak of cholera in Malakal IDP camp. And the cases of rank has not been reported as such. But our fear is that, it's rain season. And we're already beginning to witness rain in Rang, given the congestion at the transit camp. And then that's why we felt it's something very serious, if not taken into consideration early enough.
Mm.
Yes, and the place is too congested that we're worried that because cholera is contagious, and if it happens to get there, even the sanitation at the camp is still wanting, and decongesting the camp will be the most appropriate thing to do in order to avoid outbreak of any waterborne or, diseases, including cholera. For the young children, we can talk about pneumonia too.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're speaking about, how many have been affected?
Well, while I was there at the transit camp, we went to different households. We came across this household, a lady who came with six children from Sudan, and she lost two children.
Oh dear.
And when we asked what is the cause of this, basically from her narration, the babies had rashes, and when the baby, the two of them were taken to the hospital, the other one passed on, and the one that was alive, the mother had to carry him along, and then they came to bury the other one. But then when we asked, why didn't you take the other one back, said, basically, I can't take this baby because while I was there, the medical services are not adequate. And that tells you that the medical services in that area needs an urgent support. And she chose not to take the baby back. And after a period of about 4 days, the baby also passed on.
Oh, dear.
Now, she's thinking about the four remaining children. It's something heartbreaking.
That's a very tragic experience there. Now, what should be the immediate intervention for this situation?
I think decongesting the transit camp would be something very good, and we're very glad that the Minister of Human Rights Affairs was down there by the time I was there, and he had a meeting with the partners, and there's a plan of trying to decongest that camp. I think when it is decongested, then it will give an opportunity for space and to avoid the overcrowding, and possibly it will minimize the chances of this kind of deadly diseases to coming in. But I also think that the humanitarian situation in the country is wanting, and we already know about 9.4 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance, and out of the 12 of million people. So the need is huge, but there is no funding. There is a considerable cut of fund for humanitarian work in this country. Of course, the world is being faced with different humanitarian crises. We have Ukraine, we have Libya, we can count. So South Sudan, because of it having its protracted nature of the situation, I think we're about to be a forgotten crisis. But we are appealing to donors to rethink about South Sudan and increase, funding to rescue the dire situation.
Right. So what was Save the Children doing down there?
Well, I mean, our mandate is on children. One of the things we do there is, because of the desperate journey people take, and because of the crisis in Sudan, at the border we find children who are unaccompanied or they are separated. or the some of them even have no idea where their relatives are. And what we basically do is to see how do we support these children. Mm-hmm. We have a very good number of them that have been recorded already in our system called CPMIs, and about 50 of them, and out of this, we around 29 of them have been reunited with their families, and we are looking forward for doing that more. We also try to look at children who have psychosocial issues,
right,
because the journey is very long. They're able to witness, you know, frightening things, and we also provide some psychosocial support.
Mm.
We have child-friendly spaces where we get these children to play just like, you know, another child,
yes,
that has a right to play.
Right.
And we also do referrals for that matter.
Right. Now, for the children who have not yet been reunited with their families, where are they now?
Well, we have a process whereby we always get for them foster mothers, you know, attach them to a family, and the family will be able to take care of them. And then we have our staff that routinely go and check, you know, both the child and the foster parents, how they are doing, whether they have concern and all this. That's how we got them attached for now, as we look for appropriate ways of trying to, you know, get them either reunited or get something better for them.
Right. As we were speaking earlier, you made an impassioned call that the transit camp be decongested. Weren't there plans to decongest it?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, the humanitarian, as humanitarian partners, we're very grateful for the government. I think the humanitarian minister and the governor for Upper Nile were both there, and they said the plan is to decongest this. I think there is an acre of land that has already been given, and ACTED that manages the camp are also trying to see the viability of trying to establish and what it will require. I think that's a very good move, and we have also seen increased transportation of the people who are in this transit center to their final destination. IOM has been doing this. I think this is very good, and these are efforts towards, you know, decongesting the camp.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, very many who have been on the ground describe the conditions that the refugees and the returnees are living in as very deplorable. But how are they surviving in terms of water and food? Do they have access to clean water?
You know, at such a time, it's a crisis. And most of the NGOs started responding a month ago. And the conditions of, in terms of access to clean water is challenging, but there are few water points already provided. But the problem there is the queue.
Right.
It's very long. Yeah. And the humanitarian community down there are trying to sit down to see how can this be helped better. I think there are measures being put in place, but the most striking thing is everybody is talking about lack of funding, which we think needs a serious attention. And we're also trying to say that we call upon you know, the parties to this conflict to really reconsider, given the plight of the Sudanese people, you know, coming in with their situation, looking tired, weary, and really traumatized. So we're calling upon them to rethink about this and look for better alternatives, maybe of sorting out whatever the cause of the crisis might be.
Right.
Yeah.
And since Save the Children's mandate is to take care of children, I am sure every day there is at least people coming in from Sudan. What measures have you put in place in terms of taking care of these children who arrive, those who need psychosocial support?
On average, while I was there, you could receive about 1,000 plus people every day. And these are families that come with the children.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the children, they are really, really tired. Really tired. And some of them are not in the best condition.
Mm.
But then Save the Children, together with the other partners like LWF, you know, IRC, we're all working on protection.
Mm.
So what we do is we do screening and then try to identify the needs for every child and try to see what is that we can be able to do and what are those other things we can be able to refer to other partners who are also working in this situation.
Mm.
So it's a daily thing because most of these returnees come at night. They cross the border at night. And then in the following morning, they are there at the border, particularly Jordan. That's the border I went to. And I think the number of children and women are more than actual demand.
Right.
And the situation is really bad. You know, the needs of these two groups is really huge. Mm. And if we turn away our faces, we're likely to see more catastrophic situation more. And particularly the children, I'm very much worried about them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate indeed. Muzamil, thank you so much for making our time to speak to us. What is your final message to the government and well wishes?
My message to the government is that we should keep up to support the station and try to invest to see that all the returnees probably back to their home areas in a very safe environment, and probably that will help much more. And we appreciate right now the level of collaboration, coordination we're having with them.
Mm.
But again, we are calling upon the international donors to increase their funding to the country, because the crisis here is multiple in nature. We've not recovered from the COVID,
yeah.
And then you had the 3 years of consecutive flooding. Now you have issues of food insecurity. The number of children malnourished is increasing. So we are appealing for more funding to the humanitarian agencies in order to support the dire situation in this country.
Right. Muzamil Sabit, thank you so much for your time.